Hello, cyclocross friends and also mountain bike friends. I'm looking at you, Felonious Funk. And welcome to episode 102 of Crosshairs Radio, final episode of 2017. And we're going to finish it up with a couple conversations that I had while in Colorado for the USA Cycling National Team launch a couple weeks ago. Got the opportunity to sit down with current national champion in the elite women's field for cross country mountain bike, Kate Courtney, and also the performance director and also head of the mountain bike program, formerly head of the cyclocross program as well for USA Cycling, Mark Gullickson. Our conversations, you know, little truncated conversations with both of them. Normally, I'd love to sit down for about an hour each with them. We were on a tight schedule, so it was great to have them for as long as I did, about 20, 25 minutes each with both of them. But I think we got some good conversations out of it nonetheless, and we'll probably follow up with them again in the future. So thanks for tuning into that, and we will get to those interviews as soon as I tell you about our sponsors for this show. First one. Health IQ, which is a life insurance company. Okay, if you listen to Crosshairs Radio, you know all about Health IQ already. What you may not know is that is the story behind Health IQ. It's actually Munjal Shah. He worked for, or actually sold his company to Google in 2010, entrepreneur, tech guy. Was living not the healthiest lifestyle at that point, ended up having to go to the hospital for chest pains, and got into health, got into fitness, lost 40 pounds, started studying this and created this health company with him and his friends. They started this quiz to try to narrow in on who the healthiest people in the country are, you know, using questions not only to elicit answers that everyone can give, but more specific questions, you know, not how much do you run, but can you run an 8-minute mile? You know, that kind of stuff. Just really try to gauge exactly what people's fitness level is. And then they use that data in coming up with this life insurance company, Health IQ, which is the sponsor of Crosshairs Radio, also the Wide Angle Podium Podcast Network. What they have been able to do by narrowing down people's lifestyles and finding the healthiest people in the country is give you all steep discounts on life insurance. What you need to do is go to healthiq.com/cxhairs. There's a little quiz there, just like what I was just talking about, to see if you qualify for these lower rates on life insurance. This is a great New Year's resolution. You know, we talk about life insurance, we talk about adulting. And it's one of those things that is really a smart and responsible thing to do, not just for you. It's just not for you at all. It's for the loved ones in your life, your family. And it's something that as we get older, it sadly is something we need to think about. But you guys are healthy, so you're good risks, which means you're going to be around for a while, which means that they want to invest in you. So go to healthiq.com/cxhairs, take the quiz. Talk to them. It won't take you too long, and it helps us at the show. Wide Angle Podium Podcast Network. It's been a fantastic year. We want to thank all of our listeners for going along with in this journey with us. We have big things planned for the coming year. Big announcement coming up on New Year's Day or right after. So stay tuned for that. The Podcast Network doing some really cool things, trying to give back to the community as well that has made us successful. So go to wideanglepodium.com, become a member. You know, you can do it as little as $5 a month or just give a one-time donation or not at all. You know, just go out there and follow the show, support the shows, talk about the shows on social media, go to iTunes, you know, rate and review. And that helps us grow as well. And we love having you all as listeners and look forward to 2018. All right. We're going to get into it now, starting off with my conversation with Kate Courtney, and we're going to do that right now.
I do this podcast that is predominantly, not all, but predominantly cyclocross. But we do have non-cyclocross people on there. But I need to start with the question, have you ever raced cyclocross?
I have never raced cyclocross.
You've never raced cyclocross?
Not once. I wanted to this year. I know Nationals is
in Reno,
so very close to where I grew up and just a drive away. But yeah, we decided that I really need to focus on my early season goals and keep my training focused towards those big mountain bike races.
I understand that.
Yeah. And also in the past, I have been a student for the past 4 years. And so racing in the fall was kind of off the table. I was pretty hardcore studying
then. How cool would it be just to show up? You'd probably do the elite field. Because you're not, are you even eligible for U23 anymore?
No,
No, you're done.
I'm done. Full on elite.
Okay. Start at the back. I think it would be cool.
It's on my list. It's on my bucket list. You will see me in a cyclocross race. Right. I can't give you a timeline yet.
That's okay. first full year racing elite coming up. You've raced with all these women mm-hmm. before, so that's not really, it's not like you're going into something you don't know. So what's the difference? What's the included challenge now?
Absolutely. So a lot of people kind of overemphasize the jump to elite because it is a new category, but as you said, I have raced elite in the US, so I've had the opportunity to race a lot of those top World Cup girls, but the difference is that I've raced them one at a time or two at a time.
Yeah.
So being in a field, even some of our pro XCTs last year at Sea Otter, there were, you know, four or five really strong World Cup level elite women, but there weren't 20.
Right.
And that brings in a completely different racing tactic. A lot of it is based on start position and ability to cut through the field and not, you know, waste your matches too early. So, so I think that it's going to be definitely a challenge, and a huge step up for me, but I feel confident and excited to, you know, put my big girl chamois on and try to meet that challenge.
Well, you're also, it is true, you know, thinking about it, you're going from really a season where, yeah, other than a couple occasions, your field was three people. I mean, after a lap, your field is three people. So now, it's definitely, you got to have your head more on a swivel because you're going to be racing in a pack and in a field.
Absolutely. And that brings in a lot of other tactics and focuses for me this year. I think in those elite fields, there's a lot of women that are capable of winning and a lot of women that are capable of being on the podium. And a lot of times it comes down to how you pace yourself and how you're able to moderate your effort to make that selection, but not be completely cracked when you're there. So I think it's going to be a little bit of a learning process, but hopefully looking to make it up there.
Well, it's also, you can look at, you know, recent history in the women's field. There is a youth movement. So that doesn't, it's not like something you need all of this time in that field to succeed. And you know, we've seen it for the past few mm-hmm. years that the women at the top are, you know, in their early 20s.
Yeah. I think it's a really exciting and cool moment to be a young female cyclist. I think there's a lot more attention and support for this category, particularly in mountain biking. And I think also there's a lot of pioneers just in front of me who have made really successful transitions from U23 or upgraded early and were finishing in, you know, top 10s in the overall in the World Cup. And so that's really promising to look up to. But it's also nice to have the pressure off a little bit for that first year. I think everyone recognizes that it is a new category. It's a big jump and people aren't putting pressure on me to win immediately, which gives me the opportunity to set my own goals and really aim for the top, but have the room to build the skills I need and build the fitness I need to get there.
All right. So sort of a tough follow-up mm-hmm. question
okay.
there. Well, just in that, leaving the U23 field, moving to a new field, a field that, you know, we'll see how you do. Maybe you'll be right out there, but you're still kind of leaving that disappointment from the end of last season there that you can't get out there and go, okay, I'm going to get in here. I'm going to win this next race after Worlds. And, you know, this is, I don't want to call it redemption or whatever else. Or is that just gone?
I think for me, it was definitely a challenge. It was a challenging race and a disappointing end to the season, although I think in a lot of ways, it was really motivating. It showed me that I can perform on my worst days. I think last season, in all of my races, I never finished outside of the top two in a cross country event, and I race a lot, and I didn't have perfect luck. I had flats, I had crashes, I had mechanicals.
No, thinking about
Alpstadt. Yeah, Alpstadt, like, exactly. So I think having that consistency is what really gives me confidence moving into next year. Not necessarily that I'll be racing for gold immediately and will redeem those world champ stripes right away, but it gives me confidence in the process and in my ability to build year over year and keep working my way up to the top. And definitely it left a lot of a lot of motivation on the table, I would say, in terms of eventually achieving that dream of the rainbow jersey.
Not sure how much time we have, but I know for a lot of people listening to this, many of course are aware of who you are, but some may not be. So what's your history in racing? Like,
what's
how did you
history?
Yeah,
who am
you know,
I? Who are you?
Who are you, Kate
easy
Courtney?
Questions. We like to start easy. What's important to you?
When did you get on a bike? When did you, you know?
Well, I'll do the quick
give
run
me the,
through. I grew up in Kentfield, California, at the base of Mount Tam, where mountain biking was invented. So cycling runs deep in my blood, I would say, but actually grew up doing a bunch of different sports. I ran cross country, I ski raced, I horseback rode, I did gymnastics, and didn't find cycling until my freshman year of high school when I joined a high school mountain bike team through the NorCal League and started. Actually, my first race was a Nika race. So a little later than you might expect getting into the sport, but it escalated very quickly. And I had the opportunity to race World Cups as a first year junior and was able to have some early success, which kind of got me on the trajectory of having continued opportunities, and was really lucky to have support from USA Cycling in those early years and get to those big races and learn what it took to compete on the international level. And then my freshman year of college, I signed my first pro contract with Specialized and have been with them ever since, which has given me the opportunity to race on the best equipment and go to all of the important events. And that's a huge asset and has really enabled me to develop as a rider and to chase that international success.
When was your first national championship? Where do you?
When I was 15.
15?
I won 15, 15? 16. So it was actually the year that I started racing.
Okay. And where was that?
In Granby, Colorado.
Oh, all right.
It was actually a sprint finish, and I put my hands up pretty early, and my parents were sure that I had lost. So,
but you pulled
we've come
out.
A long way.
Okay. Just got to make sure you're farther ahead now.
Yeah.
Before you put your.
I thought I had it, but lessons learned.
Did you race the Bear Creek in Pennsylvania, or was that before?
Yeah.
Okay.
No. Yeah. That was after.
That was after. Got it. All right. Just trying to put the timeline.
There's a lot of nationals. I'm starting
together.
To feel old with all my nationals that I've been to. Oh, remember Granby?
But then this year, so when you raced nationals this year, were you still at that point? You were still eligible to race the U23?
Yes.
Okay. Definitely. What was the decision to just jump up to the elite?
Yeah, I think
a couple things.
I was ready for the challenge and really wanted the opportunity to go after those real Stars and Stripes jerseys. And I also knew that I'd be upgrading to elite this year for World Cups. So if I won the U23 jersey, not only would I get less UCI points, but I also couldn't wear it. So I decided to race elite in the off chance that I won, I get to actually race in the national champion kit all year, which is a huge honor and will really make my first year in elite special.
When you're at a World Cup race, and I mean, obviously, you know most of the courses now, so even starting out when you're first going over to Europe, And I have a reason for asking this question, mm-hmm. and it's mainly because I have an agenda for what I see with the USA Cycling team that goes over there. It seems like every other federation has a coach, has somebody out there kind of rolling with them, showing them lines, stopping them at each feature, sessioning each feature, going back, sort of talking through it. And I don't see that as much with mm-hmm. USA Cycling. Like, there's not that mentor out there. It's sort of the riders are out there doing their thing. They do a great job, you know, but I don't see that sort of...
Yeah, well, so we have... Yeah. Oh, no, go ahead.
No, please.
Yeah, we do have a skills coach. Mm-hmm. His name is Shams March, and I've been lucky enough to work with him for a few years and to do some camps. And in the past, he has been at a couple of the World Championship events, which is really helpful. I think especially for the younger riders who maybe it's their first introduction to international racing, it's their first World Champs or World Cup level event, and they have someone to really show them the ropes. I think informally, there's a lot of mentorship within the U.S. team. So yeah. I know that when I was a junior, I was able to ride a lap with some of the elite women at the time, and they really took time to help me learn how to do those features and even just talk through the decision of, do I ride an A-line if I'm not comfortable, or how can I be successful on a course that's really challenging me? So I think there is some of that informal mentorship. And I think also for the more elite riders and people that have had more experience, being able to do those skills camps and get to races, a lot of times it can be better to be on your own program and really just get to the course, do what you need to do, mm-hmm. And get out of there and put your legs up. So I was lucky to have the early support, the skills camps, but then also kind of the freedom to look after what I needed, especially at World Championships this year.
How many laps do you need to ride when you see a new track, especially a World Cup, before you feel like you're pretty comfortable with it?
I think it can depend on the course. Yeah. There's some courses with no features, really. Yeah. No big features. That's true. Say Alpstadt is one of those courses where there's a tricky turn and there's...
They put in that drop.
Yeah, there's a drop, but but there are things that you can get comfortable on pretty quickly. Yeah. I will say that in the past couple of years, I've tried to spend less time on the courses. Because at the end of the day, once you can ride the features and you can visualize the course and go home and think about it and know that you are comfortable on it, it is better to save your legs for race day.
Yeah, interesting. Have you ever hit Brad when you're jumping over him in any of those videos?
I have not. I have hit he was wearing a shark hat in one of them, and I hit the tip of the shark hat, which alarmed me, but I did not hit his head. So
okay. Check out Brad Copeland and Kate's Instagram feed.
We'll be working on some videos this year.
Okay.
Yeah, if there's any special requests, we're thinking up some.
The tech interviews were pretty outstanding too. Those are good.
We'll try and do some more of this.
Okay, cool. What is the so you're a Red Bull athlete?
I am.
Uh oh. Okay, now that goes along with my question. Is that part of the rules?
What?
You know, like during I want to know about media training.
I don't know that we do that much.
You don't
training.
Do any? Okay.
Okay, my phone is on silent, but I got an Apple Watch because I wanted to track my sleep, and I use it in the gym, right. And so I can't figure out how to get it to stop ringing on my Apple Watch.
This is a better question then. I'd rather talk about this.
This is critical stuff,
with
people.
The Apple Watch.
Okay.
And with tracking your sleep.
Yeah.
When do you charge it?
I charge it, like, during the day. It doesn't take very long to charge, actually.
Okay.
It's pretty darn quick.
Because I'm a little OCD about charging, making sure my phone and everything is charged. So I did the same thing, and I was like, oh, I'll sleep. Okay, two things. One, I didn't know how to put on like the little theater thing. So every time I'd roll over, like my watch would turn on. So that was waking me up.
Yeah.
And then
it's an adaptation process, really.
Yeah. And then the other thing, I was concerned that I'd wake up and then put it on and be halfway through my day and I'd have a dead watch.
Yeah. No, it's been a lifestyle change for me.
Okay.
No, but I think it's good. It also is important to me, at least recognize
very seriously about the Apple Watch now.
Very serious. Well, it's part of my new one of my big goals for this year is to focus on recovery and to use more data, but in a way that's really productive and helpful. So I think you can track basically anything now, which can be an asset, but also can be overwhelming and can make you get caught up in a lot of things that aren't going to contribute to your bottom line of performance. So
how important is, I mean, it seems like, especially, I think the fallacy is that younger athletes think they don't have to do those things because they're young and they'll recover, right? You don't have to get them to sleep. You don't have to get the diet. But it seems like that's also somewhere that you can get ahead without even getting on your bike. Is that something that's important that you've really...
I think a lot of younger athletes, there are a lot more tools now. I am a self-proclaimed serious power meter nerd. You can ask Brad about that. I recalibrate like 100 times on our rides. So I love the data, and I think that suits certain personalities, but also I think that suits younger racers who are coming up in a generation where they have access to those resources and to people who know how to interpret them and know how to incorporate them in training. And that's been a big asset for me.
You talked a little bit before, we're getting serious again, about the mentorship just from other women who were at these World Cup races. I see that. It seems like that is a huge advantage, especially with the U.S. women, that they have in that field, in that there are so many more successful athletes than in the men's field. I'm just trying to put my head around why that is. I mean, why do you think that, you know, we see it in cyclocross too. I think a lot of it is that the U.S. of, you know, does a really good job with women athletes, but,
absolutely.
I mean, is there anything else to it? I mean, it seems like it's a really good core.
I don't know if I can explain it entirely, but I do think that it's helpful to see on our, of course, new USA national team that there are people having a lot of success in every discipline, and that USA Cycling has identified women's development and women's performance as a top priority and has set some really big goals and some high standards for what they expect from their women's program. And that's something that's really empowering and is giving more racers really great support, really big opportunities, but also just kind of from a mentality and inspiration perspective shows us what's possible. So seeing even, you know, across disciplines, seeing people like Kristen Armstrong who have been able to repeat performances of gold medals. That's something that, you know, I might not have thought was possible for the U.S. in cycling until I saw her do it. And then it opens up your mind to what the possibilities are and to what level people truly can reach. She's obviously a remarkable person and not everyone's going to win repeat gold medals, but I think setting that gold standard and that bar incredibly high pushes everyone to get as close as they can.
For somebody who's starting out or doesn't do a ton of mountain bike, what's your favorite skills tip that you can give somebody when they're like riding trails something that people do wrong
I was going to say skills tip for the World Cup features.
Okay, perfect.
One of them, so when I first started racing World Cups, they didn't have many drops, but when they started introducing them, that was a huge mental kind of block for me. I was really scared of getting off the ground and didn't know how to work up to that because I'd just show up at those races and have a huge jump to go off. I think the biggest tip that helped me was to start small and to build the skill. So you can build the skill of going off a drop off a curb. You know, you can build it on something really small. And if you practice that and take it seriously, when you get to a bigger drop, you will know, oh, I do this. So that the first time you go off, you're not just winging it and kind of closing your eyes and hoping it's okay. You say, okay, I'm going to, you know, put this skill that I've developed and I've worked on and I know how to do into motion.
That's awesome. Perfect. All right. We're getting the head nod.
Getting the ball.
Yeah. No, but the cool. Well, thank you for taking the time to
of course.
To chat. And yeah, maybe I'll see you later in the season. We can catch up after you've raced some elite races.
Oh, man. Hopefully a positive catch up will be in our future.
Great.
Thank you.
Yeah.
All right, there you have it. Great time talking with Kate. Go follow her on Instagram, Kate plus Fate, all one word, KatePlusFate. And as I said, you know, as the World Cup season progresses, we'll try to catch up with Kate during that and see how everything is going for her first year in the elite on the World Cup mountain bike scene. Next up, we got Mark Gullickson, and we're going to jump right into that conversation, and we're going to do that right now.
So, Mark, I think a lot, so the main people who listen to this podcast that you were talking to is Crosshairs Radio, are cyclocross people, but they, you know the history of cycling, probably they I'm sure have heard your name, but not everybody, everybody out there. Yes. We got some folks in there that started, you know, cyclocross is such an interesting one in that you even get these guys now in their 40s and it's the first time they're racing at all. And this is what it is. So just, can you just give me a brief background of Mark Gullickson in racing and then even to where you are now?
I'll try to be brief.
you can be not brief. Yeah, I was trying to say.
I got to cycling in a roundabout way through Nordic skiing, and I got to cross in a roundabout way through road racing initially, and then I raced for probably 10 or more years as a professional mountain bike racer and started to dabble in cyclocross toward the end of my mountain bike career, and then sort of doubled up for a number of years and then was just purely cross for a couple of years. And raced sort of at the highest level domestically and all those, and was, you know, sporadically successful at international events in both mountain and cyclocross.
What region in the U.S. were you racing cyclocross predominantly?
I was living in Durango at the time that I and Boulder when I was racing cross, but we traveled to all the, like it is now, there's UCI races across the country, and we would almost every weekend for a time. Todd Wells and I were teammates, and the late Steve Larson also was my teammate in cross and mountain bike for a couple of years. So we would fly around the country.
That racing, I don't want to disparage racing today. I think it's good. My comment on racing, especially like in the last year or so, I was actually talking to Tim Johnson about this specifically. It seems like it's gotten very nice since the time that you all raced.
Nice in terms of...
It seems friendlier out there.
Friendlier. It's interesting. You know, I'm a big tennis fan, and I remember back in the days of... John McEnroe and Jimmy Connors. Those guys were just, there was a little bit more of an edge to it. And now you see Federer and they'd all come to the net and they're, you know, they're certainly competitors, but there's a lot more sort of mutual respect. And I think part of it might have been that back when I started racing cross, there was a certain element of these top level road racers dipping into cross. And there were, on the roadside, there's maybe a little, less solidarity amongst the pros, and it's a little more cutthroat. And they may have brought that edge in. I'm not going to name names, but the McCormicks and Barbeau.
I don't think you're calling anybody out there.
We're pretty steeped in that stuff, and I appreciated that. It was different for me because on the mountain bike side, we were a little bit more of a clan, a little more.
Yeah.
You know, it was a little more everybody does what they can, and there wasn't as much teamwork. But obviously, when you got these guys who are making big road salaries coming in, their perspective is you hold your cards closer to your chest, and you basically use your teammates to work over the other guys. And it was kind of new for us. And now I feel like there maybe isn't as much of that like a dominant team like Saturn sort of was that example during my time.
How was the transition from racing into doing what you are doing now? And if you can just sort of, you know, briefly explain the job description of what your position is at USA Cycling.
Yeah. Well, I bounced around for a few years after officially stopping my cyclocross racing. Although I did basically go straight from my last national championship cross race to doing contract work for USA Cycling for that next world championship, which was a month after the nationals at that time. So I have been working initially in a limited capacity with USA Cycling, first just in cyclocross world championships, and then cyclocross and mountain bike world championships as a contractor. And then in 2008, they brought me on full time to run both programs. And just recently, in the past few months, 6 months maybe, Jeff Proctor's been put in charge completely of cyclocross to give me a little bit of bandwidth in the winter time to prepare everything for the mountain bike season. And that has been a good change. I mean, of course, I'll miss going to the World Championships for cyclocross, but I didn't do a ton of travel for cross over the last few years. And I think Jeff is a great leader for that program. They're still going through a little bit of readjustment in terms of how to get Jeff involved in a sort of a larger capacity, yeah, because he's got a lot of still responsibilities from his normal job and teaching. So hopefully that'll get worked out and we'll.
That's interesting. So I knew that he had taken that position. I didn't realize that then. So basically selecting the world's team and that kind of thing, that's all his.
Right. Yeah. In the past, I have been sort of the point person for the block selections, these development block selections, sure, to the World Cups. All the World Cup entry stuff that goes along with entering the elite riders in the World Cup, there's a certain amount of information gathering that has to go on for each World Cup that can be somewhat time-consuming. And then also putting together this big world championship trip, which is probably like 40 riders now and 20 staff, and it's just a huge
yeah, especially since it's, you know, a little more equal with U23 women's, right, field we got, yeah, in, yeah, there as well,
and
which
plus
is
we
good
get continental champs in there, so the team, yeah, seems like it's been just sort of ballooning, which is great that we have more U.S. riders going over, but it's, I feel like it's exponentially harder the more cyclocross racers you get into one team, just because, I don't know why, but I know it's just a lot of bikes in one, yeah, room. You should see the bike room at the World Championships.
Oh, I'm sure. And it's right. And they're still competing against everybody who has six bikes with them.
Right. Yeah. And they have to fly and we have limited. Yeah. And it's just, it's a beast of an event to plan for and then to work on. But Jeff's up to the challenge, I'm sure, and he's got a lot of support over there in Europe.
Yeah. Well, it should be at least a little, maybe logistically easier with it being in the Netherlands this year.
Right. I believe they're going to base out of Sittard,
right,
for the Valkenburg, because that's the way we used to do it for that World Cup. And that does bring a nice element of familiarity to the team and to the staff, and it's maybe a little longer drive than is ideal, but we did the same thing for Zolder 2 years ago, and it worked out pretty well.
Yeah. So what you know specifically is your role now with the mountain bike athletes?
My role now is essentially what it was. Having said that, I do have a new title, I guess, is the performance director.
One of the performance directors.
Although I'm still the program director as well. What that means to me is that I continue to work with the same athletes that I've been working with. It's different for some of the other performance directors that were hired, Kristen Armstrong and Greg Henderson, because they haven't been actively working with these athletes that they're all of a sudden connected with here today. So that's sort of a new frontier for them and for the riders. But for me, I've already been working with Cade and Howard and all the elite riders that were named today for the mountain bike national team. Yeah. So for me, it's just continuing this role as a national team leader, except we call it a national team now. And it's obvious there'd be more services that we'll offer them and more resources. So that part of the communication and my interaction will with those riders will be bumped up.
What's your relationship with the USA Cycling or Mountain Bike Team USA riders who are competing at World Cup, specifically the U23 riders, that whole host? That's, you know, it seems like it's a lot of the Bear Development guys over there.
Another change, and again, this change has been sort of coming for a few years. I've been working with a contracted coach, Jason Jablonski, who lives in Washington and coaches a number of the, well, he's got a history of coaching top level mountain bikers. He has been helping me out in a lot of my development projects, just because there's quite a bit of travel between the juniors, the U23s, and the elite riders. And we've brought him on in a bigger role for 2018. We will be bringing him on. He'll be more closely monitoring some of our best riders training, some of these development riders that we want to make sure that are in the right spot physically before these trips, just to keep sort of raise the bar in terms of what they're doing and not just let them just do whatever and then have them show up for a trip and not know if they're really ready. So that is going to be a big role for him. But he has been traveling with a lot of this these development trips. And in fact, last year and some this year, he's going to be the coach on hand at some of these World Cups.
Okay.
So, you know, for years, for probably 10 years, I've been doing exclusively traveling to these World Cups with the U23s and juniors a few years back, as well as some elites. And now he's sort of taking on some of that, a lot of that World Cup stuff. And I'm actually, last year, or in 2017, I've dipped more back into working with the juniors a bit, just to mix it up a little. The year after the Olympics, sort of, I was sort of like, I've been to Alpstadt I don't know how many years in a row. Jason knows, has also been there a couple times. So I was like, why don't you handle it this year? And you did a great job. So
here's my question, and maybe I'm just missing it. And, you know, set me straight if I'm wrong here. What I see from a lot of the other federations at these World Cups, especially with their U23 racers, and even up there, is that normally when they'll be out previewing the course, it's going to be a group of them, and they're going to have a coach with them, almost like a skills coach,
right?
Who's walking them through everything. This is the line you need to look at. Let's stand here for a while and watch Nino go by and see what he does, and then see what we can do in comparison. There's a lot of not just letting them shred everything, but just sort of slowing everything down, and walking them through that. I don't see that with USA Cycling.
We do incorporate skills training. It's not always at the World Cup venue. We have definitely invested a lot of time and energy in getting specifically our women, junior U23 and elite women who are going to be riding on these World Cup courses, time with Chalmers March, who's our USA Cycling skills coach that works with these groups. He has come to events, multiple World Cups and World Championships, and we had him at the Olympic test event and the Olympics in Rio, doing exactly what you're talking about. having said that, he's a super busy guy.
Yeah.
And it's much more expensive and time commitment for him to fly over to these World Cups.
And it's, but just like these are the most demanding courses out there, and it seems like there's a benefit to that. And even on the – it's not – I see it more with the men that are over there. The women actually just talked to Kate about this as well a little bit, and she's like, well, there's more informal mentorship there, and I think that's just the strength of the U.S. women that's there. Yeah. And then you also have, you know, like Valdek is doing the same thing with the Clif Pro team. So those women sort of get that – exposure to the course and skill, you know, as well.
Yeah. Well, it's an evolving sort of process for us. Jason does go out and ride when he's there with the riders. I don't typically go out and do laps with the riders. I feel like our riders have gotten so good that even our, you know, first, second year U23 women are typically better skills riders than I am, for sure. That wasn't the case 10 years ago, but it's a, they've come a long way, and it's because of these World Cup courses that pushed them.
It's just the full suspension bikes.
Okay. All right. That sounds better to me, too. But, yeah, I mean, in an ideal world, we would have a dedicated skills coach at every World Cup.
Yeah.
Just for us, it's taking a while to get there. And, you know, our elite women and U23 women have really bonded with Shams and really like the way he coaches. And the only unfortunate thing about that is that Shams is quite busy with a lot of his other coaching duties. So he doesn't always have time to go to every World Cup, or he doesn't have time to go to every World Cup. And sometimes it's hard to just plug in someone else, because it's interesting how close or how much our best women appreciate Shams's teaching, his style of teaching skills. And I think it is really comforting for them to have him around. And that's one reason we made sure that he was at the Olympics. And the other thing is, a lot of these World Cup courses, our elite women especially, have seen him so many times, they know what they're getting into. It would be great to have him there for some of these U23.
Right. Yeah. That's more riders. What I was looking at. What's the challenge in recruitment? And I see, you know, and I know this isn't a new question, especially with mountain bike, when you have so many disparate organizations out there, not everybody's coming under the USA Cycling umbrella. You know, what's kind of the goal for you, or the effort to try to bring or to see everyone? I mean, you got to be missing folks out there.
Yeah, I'm sure we're missing folks out there, but I feel pretty good about the way I feel good about, number one, the amount of young mountain bike cross country riders that are racing, and specifically thanks to Nika on a lot of that front, because they're bringing a lot of young kids in. And but I also feel like the best kids from Nika know what the next step is and are locked in enough to Kate's story and Haley's story, or, you know, Nielsen, or these kids who have come out of those, or Howard was just said he just talked to, I think, the Colorado League's final race, he was there and talked to the riders or rode with them. And so they get enough of this, the information on sort of who to contact. They contact me on occasion. They talk to other people. But I feel like the best riders are finding their way into our programs. You're right, probably right. Some are slipping through, but it's,
is there a conflict that needs to be sorted out between Nika and cyclocross?
That's a good question. I'm not totally up to speed on where, or you mean the season conflict? Yeah, I have heard from locally here, the Boulder Junior Cycling, cyclocross riders are sort of needing to, you know, a lot of those kids are super into the high school league, and it cuts into their cyclocross racing on the Front Range. Luckily for us, there's a lot of good cyclocross races on the front range, and they, I don't think is such a huge negative impact on their cyclocross. In fact, you know, it's nice that they can see some other, another discipline and have a motivation to race in another discipline. And usually they're young enough where splitting that up is a good thing. Diversity is a good thing at that age. You know, once they're U2-3 age, yeah, maybe then they need to sort of be a little bit more ultra focused on that time of the year. But I don't think it's as big a problem as maybe some people do, but that's just my perspective.
More of a, yeah. Okay. Favorite cyclocross moment from when you were racing?
Ooh, you hit me with one there. favorite cyclocross moment.
Or most memorable. You can, you know, you can hedge it a little. Just any.
Wow.
There's so many. This is the finisher.
There's so many. Well, okay. When I went over there, when I was probably, I don't even know how old, in my upper 20s, with Stu Thorne, Tim Johnson, Lynn Bassett to Switzerland, and we all stayed in this cool little cabin up on the hill. And it was, I'll never forget driving. I think it was Lynn's friend who owned the cabin from her racing days back then. And we drove up the valley, which is just past the UCI headquarters there in southern Switzerland, I think. And the valleys, you know, it's middle of the wintertime, but the valley's free of snow. The roads are good for training. I'm looking around, it's like, this is going to be great. And we had World Cups lined up in France and Switzerland, and the Worlds were coming up in maybe Zolder. But then we started driving to the house, and we went up the side of this mountain on the in the valley, up from the valley floor, and it was just up, and the more snow. And then we finally got to the place. It must have been, I don't know, felt like 10 miles up the valley, and it was just like a full-on winter wonderland up there. And I was like, oh my God, it's beautiful, but I don't know how we're going to make this happen. And we made it happen. We drove down and rode, you know, it was fine, but it was one of those moments where you're getting plugged in and you're in Europe and you just got to make it work.
Definitely.
And it was cool to get to know those guys in that setting. I actually went over there with my wife and my older son, who was just, I think, 2 years old then, maybe. So it was cool.
Nice. Yeah. Awesome. Yeah, definitely memorable. Yeah. Thank you, Mark.
You're welcome.
All right. There it is. Mark Gullickson, Kate Courtney. Thanks for sitting down with me for those conversations. Thank you all for listening, and thanks for a great 2017. Looking forward to next year, and we will be back soon right after the new year. If you need to get back, get in touch with me. You can do that at feedback@cxhairs.com. Also follow along at cxhairs on Instagram and also on Twitter. And make sure you go to YouTube, youtube.com/cxhairs. Subscribe to the channel. We're going to have tons of coverage from U.S. Cyclocross Nationals starting from Wednesday and working all the way through Sunday. We'll have you covered. So make sure that you are already subscribed so you'll get notifications of new videos as they go up. And that's it. Have a good one. Go out for a ride. Stay warm.